Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Game Changers, where I talk exclusively about Indian women in sports, the good, the bad, and the ugly. In the last episode, I had a chance to interview table tennis champion Mona Lisa Mehta, who gave us great insight into the positives and development in women's sports in our country, in addition to sharing her experiences. In this episode, I have the privilege of interviewing someone who will give us more insight into the life of women in cricket and talk to us more about women in sports in general. Welcoming Ms. Karunya Keshav. Karunya Keshav is an independent sports writer. A lot of her writing is about cricket and women in sport. Karunya is the co-author of the book The Fire Burns Blue, which is a history of women's cricket in India from the 1970s to around 2018. On a personal note, I'm currently reading this book and there's definitely nothing more exciting to learn about more about women in cricket. Her experience with this topic makes her such a great person to help us understand more and get deeper insights into these topics. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. We can dive straight in. So the first question is, how big is the disparity in cricket between genders, and what are the key differences you notice that come with this disparity?
First of all, thanks for having me on your show. So in terms of disparities, yeah, there are considerable disparities between men and women in cricket. So if you're talking about things like access, there's not so much difference. So say, for example, the men and the women, especially at the state or the national level, have access to the same kind of training centers and coaching and grounds, knowledge, things like that. But in two main areas, there is a difference. So first is the money aspect of it. And second is in terms of opportunities. So when you talk about money, it's things like how much they get paid, how much the product itself is worth in terms of broadcast, how many advertisers they get, in terms of resources that are put into, in terms of the investment that happens into women's cricket, it's a lot less than what goes into the men's game. And then there's a thing of opportunity where there's this massive difference in the opportunities that male players get and what female players get. So that means, you know, the kind of competitions they have, how many matches they play in a year, where they play these matches, and also what paths they have after sport. And in administration. So, you know, those sort of opportunity differences are quite a bit.
Yeah, that's very true. And it's very noticeable, right? Even from the outside, you can make out clearly that there's, when you look at whether it's the IPL or just generally cricketing tournaments, on textbook, they're very similar. But then when you see the way that they're carried out, you can see the differences in which it's treated based on the genders. The second question is, what are some instances where you observe that a girl or woman missed out on something because of this disparity that exists, especially in the areas that you talked about?
You just mentioned the IPL, and I think that's a fantastic example. So the men obviously have this IPL and the women don't. The IPL has been going on for 14 years right now, right? And ideally, there should have been something for the women. It's something to get the women involved right now. There is this 3-day exhibition tournament, which we're not really going to consider because we know how the IPL has changed lives among the men. So you have people coming in from all sorts of backgrounds, you know, different kinds of families, and that is still not available for the women. Obviously, playing cricket doesn't pay as much for the women, but it's also in terms of these other avenues of income. They have to get a job, right? So there are a lot of players that end up having to work during the morning and then practice during the evenings, balance things like that. So that's, I guess, one example of the disparity. Another very striking example, especially, you know, as I mentioned, an opportunity. So India were runners-up at the ICC Women's T20 World Cup in 2020. But after that, for about a year, they didn't play at all because of the pandemic. So obviously, the men's team, you know, they did everything they could to make sure that a lot of the tournaments happened, that they went on a lot of these tours. But the women didn't play for almost a year. And for, you know, for people who are both young and old, that's just like a whole year of very short careers that are just lost. So, I think those sorts of things that aren't, you know, make this disparity really evident.
And just to carry on from that, like when you look at the IPL specifically or just generally tournaments, What do you think creates these disparities? So is it, does it have to do with the women themselves? Does it have to do with the way that the public views them, the way that the revenue that they are getting for the BCCI or just generally any cricketing body? What do you think drives this disparity?
I think that's a tricky one. I think these differences happen on a number of levels. On one level, it's maybe just a society where, you know, this is, say, for example, in India, especially, there's this idea that if you play, you get dark. If you hurt yourself, you're not, you know, if you injure yourself, then you're not going to get married. Or in terms of like changing rooms, a girl needs a changing room, you know, even when she's just starting out. Getting to these grounds is difficult if you have to take public transport. A boy can maybe just like go stand in the corner of the ground and put his whites on. Even just wearing whites is something a lot of girls are very, very nervous about, quite honestly. So that is sort of like the social aspect of it, the infrastructural aspect of it. But at the higher level, it is very, it is about the administration. So the administration is the one that needs to step up and make sure that they treat their female members and the male, you know, the men in the system the same way, which is maybe not happening. And you also mentioned, I think, fans and advertisers. So the economics also right now isn't very balanced, but I think that is one area we're sort of getting closer to sort of bridging that gap.
So next, just personally, on like while reading your book, I have come across many stories that really, like, as a fan of cricket, even I didn't know about. And honestly, that makes me slightly embarrassed, but also it's the fact that there isn't much information out there for you to be able to know about these women. So that, like, in your book, there are many stories of these hidden heroes of the women's sport. Could you please share some stories if you wouldn't mind?
The thing is, as you said, there's just so many people to, you know, how they say it takes a village. I think for women's cricket in India, it's especially true because it's just built on so much of passion and people who go out of their way, whether in terms of their time or their money, to just, you know, make sure that the sport is alive. Hidden heroes, I think two names come to mind, and both of them were involved right in the beginning. So I'm talking about the 70s right now. So one lady is called Alu Bamchi. She was from Bombay, as it was called then. So she set up a club called Albies. And Albies is probably, there's a bit of debate around this, but it's either the first or the second club for women cricketers in India. And she was never a player herself, but she used to supervise these young girls who went on to represent India. And, you know, I think after practice, they used to all go to her house for a little bit of chocolate and things like that. So she played a really big role right at the start. The other person is a man called Mahindra Sharma, who was the first person to give Indian women's cricket some structure. So it's not like before 1970s, women didn't play cricket in India, but it was sometimes almost just like a joke. So it was like, okay, there's a women's team, but they're playing against a men's team who are playing left-handed or, you know, with some sort of handicap. So it was almost sort of an exhibition thing. So I guess Mahindra Sharma was the first person to give the whole thing some structure. He helped organize the first women's cricket nationals in the early 70s. So the first nationals had like 2.5 teams take part. So it was Bombay and Maharashtra teams. And then there was a UP team, which didn't have 11 people. So it was a bit of a mix and match. And yeah, he was involved in the running of the whole system. Initially, he put in his own money, he put in his own funds, he raised a lot of money, tried to get sponsors, spoke to politicians to get them on board. So yeah, two early heroes of the women's game.
I think those are really interesting examples, and it makes you think more about it, because generally when we think of heroes, at least my mind goes straight to people who have played the sport. And the interesting part of both the people you talked about is they're outside the sport, which shows that there's so much importance in, you might have the most enthusiastic players, but if there's someone not outside doing something, it's all for like no use. So that shows how important an outsider also plays. And I think that's really interesting examples that you share that make us think on a different dimension. And another thing about the example that you shared is the second one is a man. So I think this also plays an interesting note in the sense that it doesn't only have to be women who propel women's sports, and then men also have such a big role in what they can do to help the sport grow. The next thing is, in just on a positive note, what are improvements that you've seen from the 1970s? What are the, like, the, obviously there are some very noticeable and striking changes that you've seen that anybody would have noticed in women's cricket. What are some of them?
Yeah, I think there's almost no comparison between the game in 70s and now, except the passion side of things. I think that is still keeping things strong. I mentioned earlier the access element, which in which there's a little bit of less discrimination. So maybe even until, say, 2013, when the Women's World Cup was held in India, the final was shifted out of Wankhede Stadium, which is the biggest stadium in Bombay, to the smaller Brabourne ground. And that was because they wanted to use the Wankhede to play the men's Ranji game. And this change happened just like 10 days before a World Cup. And this was, I mean, you can't imagine this happening to the men, right? And so yeah, this was not particularly uncommon. There were times when a women's match was, you know, it got shifted out to make space for the men. But I don't think that happens as much anymore. It's definitely gotten better. Say, for example, before a tour, the men and the women, they'll be training at the same, they have the same facilities that they can use to train. Another interesting element is the broadcast at the highest level. So, you know, a lot of the women's games now, especially in terms of World Cups and things like that, those are, you know, properly broadcast. Until even a couple of World Cups ago, that was not the case. It was only the knockouts, the semifinals, the finals that used to be broadcast. So I think those are two good, two good ways of saying that, yeah, the game has developed.
And what do you think about media and their portrayal, and what importance do they hold in showing the disparity or even bridging the disparity that exists between men and women in cricket?
Yeah, I think media, it's a bit mixed right now again. So the good thing is that a lot of media organizations are very careful in the sort of language they use. For example, recently it was said that, you know, it's no longer just going to be batsmen. They're just going to use a gender neutral term, batter, which can make such a difference, because there are girls who come into the sport and they say, you know, I'm not a batsman. And that makes... That goes such a long way in making the sport more inclusive. I think there's still some way to go, though. For example, just the sports journalism itself, for example, is very male dominated, right? So there has to be more of a commitment to saying, okay, we're going to hire more women, but also use women's voices, not just in women's sport. So say, for example, it's really nice to hear a female commentator doing a test match, and that should be normal by now, but it still isn't. So you just have, you know, just a handful of people who do that. And those are areas where media can make a difference. So, you know, if you need an expert opinion on, you know, the Ashes or India, New Zealand tests or whatever it is, you get a woman to talk about it. You know, well, a lot of these ex-players obviously know the game very well. So that's one thing that can be done.
And do you think this gender inequality in sports in general is an issue in India specifically, or do you think it's globally prevalent?
I think it's globally prevalent, but at different levels, obviously. So I think every region, every country, women are sort of fighting different kinds of battles, as it should be. So it's speaking specifically about cricket, for example, Australia and England are considered the ones who have done a lot of work. They've committed to, you know, getting pay parity for a lot of their female cricketers. They make sure, so say for example, the World Cup that happened, the prize money, Australia won that tournament. The prize money for that tournament is actually a lot less than what the men would have got. But the Australian cricket body said, no, we're going to put in that extra money and make sure that what the women get for winning the World Cup would be the same as what the men would have got. So things like that, you know, those disparities are there, but some bodies are making more steps than others. But I guess the the issues are just so different everywhere. So say, for example, as I said, in India, it's probably about, you know, these social things about you're going to get dark. In a lot of other places, it's about the clothing that you wear when you wear sport. And I guess it's up to the, you know, the international bodies and fans also to sort of, again, set up an inclusive environment that takes into account all these differences.
Yeah, that's very true. And lastly, do you think that in the future it's possible, and how likely is it for both genders to be at the same level when it comes to the sport of cricket?
Yeah, I think that sort of commitment has to be made. Imagine if we're having the same conversation in 10 years, that would just be so sad. So we want to be able to say, in whether 10 years from now, 15 years from now, not just in sport, but in so many ways, that women do have, you know, women's voices are heard more. They are on the, you know, they're on at the table more. And there's just this balance in making sure that they are as much a part of sport as the men.
Yeah, that's, I hope that happens too. And I hope in the next 10 years, I'll be able to say that, yes, 10 years ago, it wasn't so positive, but now it's all good. But thank you so much for joining us today and sharing with us your ideas and inspiring stories that definitely deserve to be heard, but unfortunately sometimes are not. But that's it for today. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Game Changers.